Well, we are continuing our Lent journey through our series that we're calling The Third Way, and we have been exploring this question of what it looks like to follow Jesus, and not just follow Him in any old way, but to follow Him in a way that honors Him, that honors His kingdom, and we've been discovering that it is a way that is very different than what the world tends to offer us and what the world tends to look like. And today we're going to tackle a question that might be, at least for us personally, might be one of the most difficult questions of the series. What do you do when you face personal injustice or when you're wrong? Say somebody mistreats you, somebody lies about you, somebody takes advantage of you. Maybe it's a system that has treated you unfairly. How do you respond? And we all have natural reactions. We all have gut instincts that come up when we face these things, and they are instincts that we typically learned very early on. They're things that we see play out every day in our world, and they look an awful lot like the two options that we've been talking about that the world offers us. The first one is we fight back. We go on the attack. We return insult for insult. You know, it's eye for an eye, right? We escalate either until we win, or we want to make sure that the person who has wronged us hurts just as much as we're hurting. And it's the way of retaliation. And it feels righteous because it feels like there's justice being served there. Move number two is that we withdraw. We shut down, we take the hit, and we don't respond at all. We don't react, we say nothing. And most of the time when we do that, we convince ourselves that we're being the bigger person in the situation. That's the way of passivity, and it feels safer, because at least if we do that, we're probably not going to get hurt again. So there's two options. There's fight or flight, there's attack or retreat, retaliate or withdraw. But here's the problem with both of those. Both of those options are shaped by the very thing that harmed us in the first place. The retaliation is shaped by violence. When we respond that way, we're returning evil for evil. Withdrawal is shaped by fear. We're letting evil win by just giving up on justice altogether. And the problem with that is that neither one of those responses really are shaped by the kingdom of Jesus. And it's interesting to me, if you've noticed, how the lack of creativity and imagination that the world has when they offer us ways to respond, because it's been the exact same two options every week. The way of Jesus is much more creative, as we're going to see, and at times we'll just say risky. And as we've been talking about in this series, if you haven't guessed already, Jesus offers us a different way. He offers us a third way. It's a way that's not retaliation or retreat. It's not shaped by violence or fear. It's shaped by the cross. And so we're going to look at some of the most challenging words, I think, that Jesus spoke in the Gospels. Words that are very familiar, words that are often quoted, words that have been misused many times, but words, I think, whose meaning, for as long as they've been debated, if we really understand what Jesus is saying here, I think it could change everything about how we respond and how we reflect Jesus in the way that we respond to those moments where we suffer personal injustices or personal insults. So Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 5. He says, "You have heard the law that says the punishment must match the injury. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you're sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. They're just getting easier, aren't they? We usually all have about the same reaction when we read these words. I could not have heard that right? And there has been more ink spilled on explaining what Jesus did not mean by these words or telling us that, well, these words may have worked back in Jesus' day, but they don't work now. I think part of the point of it is that they didn't really work in Jesus' day either. But they are words that call us to a response that reflects the kingdom. But we tend to think, it sounds like this is weakness. It sounds like Jesus is just asking us to lay down and let people walk all over us. It sounds like we're giving up on justice altogether. But what if Jesus isn't teaching weakness here? What if he's actually teaching us something that is far more subversive, far more powerful, and far more strategic than either fighting back or giving up? When Jesus says, offer the other cheek and give your coat and go the second mile, what he's doing is he is introducing a posture and a way of walking and responding that is radically different than retaliation or withdrawal. And what he's giving in those examples are actual concrete examples that his first century audience would have probably either experienced or would at least be able to, they have witnessed happen. It's a way of confronting evil without becoming evil. It's a way to oppose injustice without perpetuating that injustice. It's a way of dealing with corrupt power or speaking the truth to power while refusing to use power's weapons. In short, Jesus is showing us a way of justice that is shaped like the cross. And if you see that word in the title of the sermon, cruciform justice, cruciform just means in the form of the cross, in the shape of the cross. But to really understand what Jesus is trying to say here, we really have to look at all three of these examples in their cultural context. These are not abstract principles. These speak to very specific situations with very specific responses. So I want to walk through these and kind of unpack all three of these examples that Jesus uses. So the first one he uses there is the most famous. It's the one that's probably the most quoted of all of these. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. Or you'll hear it say, turn the other cheek. Now, Jesus is very, I think, intentional in the language that he uses in this example. There's something that he's specifically trying to communicate. This isn't just about getting hit. It is a specific way in which you're being hit or the purpose behind it. A slap on the right cheek in that day had a very specific social meaning. So let's just think about this physically first. Most people in the first century were right-handed. And there were all sorts of reasons for that. Being left-handed had a lot of social and religious stigma. You didn't use your left hand for certain things because it was considered unclean for reasons we are not even going to get into in this sermon. You can read the history on that. But most people were right-handed. If you picture this. If I was going to slap you on the right cheek with my right hand, I have a couple of options. I could do this. That's like a Three Stooges slap, right? That's not very effective. It's awkward. But if I want to slap you on the right cheek and I'm facing you, the more effective way would be to backhand you. That's the type of slap that Jesus is referring to here. In the ancient world, a backhanded slap was not a fighting move. It was a slap of domination. It's how a master struck their servant. It's how a Roman soldier struck a Jewish peasant. It's how the powerful reminded the powerless of their place. It wasn't about pain. It was about humiliation. It was a statement that said, you're beneath me, you don't matter, and there's nothing you can do about it. And how does Jesus tell us to respond to this? Offer the other cheek. Now that sounds, again, like weakness, but it's brilliant. And here's who would have known that Jesus would be brilliant, right? He's like the Son of God. And here's why it's brilliant. If you offer your left cheek, you make it almost physically impossible, or at the very least awkward, for them to do the exact same thing to you again. They can't backhand you. If they're going to strike you again, they're going to have to hit you with an open palm, which is how you would strike an equal. So you see where this is. You see where this is going. That's how you would fight an equal. They would have to look you in the eye and acknowledge that you are a person worthy of being treated as their match, as their equal. So by offering the other cheek, you're not necessarily saying, go ahead and hit me again, although that might happen. You're saying something far more powerful. You are taking out of their hands the right and the ability to define your worth and who you are. You're saying, I'm not going to be humiliated by you. I refuse to accept your definition of me as less than human. You can strike me, but you cannot strip me of my God-given identity and dignity. And in doing that, you have taken the power out of the oppressor's hand without throwing a single punch or slapping in response. You've exposed the violence for what it is. And you've done it without becoming violent yourself. And you've also done it in a way that doesn't respond in kind and say, oh yeah, you think I'm less than human? Well, I feel the same way about you. It's a response that reclaims dignity without retaliation. It refuses to let someone else's cruelty define who you are. So the third way response to the slap, which again is not a slap that's intended to injure or harm physically, it's a slap that's intended to keep you in your place. And the response to that is not to retaliate, it's to stand in it unbowed, to not let it affect you at all. So Jesus continues, he uses a second example. If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. Again, context is important. In first century Palestine, most people were poor, including the majority of the people that Jesus was addressing in the Sermon on the Mount. And so most of those poor people owned exactly two pieces of clothing. There was the inner tunic or cloak or shirt that Jesus refers to. And then there was the coat or the outer cloak. The outer cloak was the one piece of clothing that was essential. It was not a fashion statement or anything like that. It was a matter of life and death in many cases because it was the thing that kept you warm at night. If you were exposed to the elements and you didn't have your coat, good luck. In fact, it was so serious, if there was somebody, Jewish law stipulated that if somebody owed a debt and the creditor was holding their coat as collateral, they would have to give it back to them at night because they couldn't leave them exposed to the elements. And so it's an essential piece of clothing. You could hold it during the day, but you had to return it at night so the person didn't freeze to death. Now imagine someone who is so desperate to squeeze money out of you that they drag you to court and sue you for your shirt. The only thing that you have left is that outer coat. It's off limits. And probably the reason they're not suing you for that is because they legally can't. That's not justice. That's exploitation. That is exploitation dressed up in legal clothing. And it's a system that is being used to crush people that it's supposed to protect. And Jesus says, if someone sues you for your shirt, give them your coat too. Which means he's telling you, you walk out of that courtroom with nothing. On. Naked. Now, imagine the scene that would cause, not just today, but in that day, because public nakedness was shameful for everybody who experienced it. Not just the person who was naked, everybody who would see it, the judge, the lawyers, whoever was involved in this. The whole system that allowed it to happen would be brought to shame. So by voluntarily taking your coat off and saying, you know what, take this too, what you're saying is you're forcing everyone in that room to kind of look in the mirror and say, look what you're doing to someone who is created in the image of God. You're not being generous. You're not just going along to get along. You are staging a non-violent act of exposure, literally. You're saying, look at this, look at what you're doing. I will not help you pretend that this is okay. It's a call to respond in a way that exposes systemic injustice with courageous, nonviolent truth-telling. When a system is crushing people, the third way response is not to fight the system with its own weapons or to just silently accept its verdict and accept the injustice. It's to make the injustice visible in a way that cannot be ignored. And then Jesus gives a third example, and this one is the most striking and probably the most dangerous. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. And if you want to see a wonderfully depicted example of this being acted out, I guess, there's a scene in The Chosen where they come along a group of Roman soldiers, and the soldiers make Jesus and his disciples carry their packs. And so it really just brilliantly depicts this setting. But to understand this, you need to know something about life under Roman occupation. Israel at this time, they were conquered territory. They had been for quite a few years. And one of the reasons that they remained to be under conquered territory was the Roman military. They had a lot of authority and power over civilians, not just Jewish civilians, but anybody who was not a Roman citizen. And under Roman military law, there was a practice called Angaria, or something to that effect, which basically said that a Roman soldier had the authority to require a civilian to help them. In this case, it would be specifically to carry their pack, which could weigh up to 70 to 100 pounds for exactly 1 mile. And there was nothing you could do about it. You just had to pick it up and go along. But the striking thing about it is that requirement, because there were limits set to what the Roman military could do. The soldier could compel you to carry it 1 mile, not one step further. And now that sounds like a gracious act, but really it was a very practical. There was a reason that Rome was in charge for so long. They knew exactly how far they could push a person before they would fight back. And they knew that if a Roman soldier tried to make a person carry their pack 2, 3, 4 miles, pretty soon that person's going to do something. They could kind of keep them in place for that first mile, but afterwards they knew, we can't do this anymore. And it was so strictly enforced that if a Roman soldier was caught doing it, the punishment for it was almost severe as it would have been for the civilian who refused to carry the pack. And so this was a very specific kind of way of doing this. But that first mile, that was a mile of forced labor. It was a mile that screamed, you're a conquered subject, you have no choice, we own you. And Jesus says, you know what? Go 2 miles. And again, here's where this is brilliant, because just picture the scene. You've reached the mile marker, and along Roman roads, that's how they determined. It wasn't just a guess. They had specific mile markers. You come to this mile marker. The soldier is expecting you to stop or maybe even drop his pack short of the mile just to say, you know what? I'm close enough. Here, you take your stuff. And as he reaches for it, you just keep walking. Suddenly, the whole scene flips. The whole thing shifts because that soldier who had been in control up to that point, now they're the one who's kind of in a panic. Because if their commander sees what's going on, oh man, it could be bad news for that soldier. If they see a civilian carrying that gear past the 1 mile limit, he's going to face serious disciplinary action. And so he starts pleading with you to give the pack back. He's saying, please stop. You've got to stop. And you're like, no, you may have forced me to do this that first mile. I'm choosing to bless you. I'm choosing to go this extra mile for you. And in one unexpected move, you have completely flipped the power dynamic. The oppressor now becomes the anxious one. You're not doing it to oppress the Roman soldier. You're doing it to turn the tables. The powerless person has seized the initiative. And you've done it without raising a fist, without causing a scene. You haven't run away. You have done something that the soldier never saw coming, because who in their right mind would carry that 100 pack an extra mile? And you've done it on your own terms, by your own choice, in your own freedom. And here's what Jesus is calling us to do. And not just in this example, but in all three of these examples. It's not passive, just acceptance of everything. We're given the call and the right to assert our humanity, but to do it and to confront unjust systems, but to do it in a way that doesn't perpetuate the injustice and all of the things that have made this situation occur in the first place. The third way response to oppressive power is not violent revolt, and it's not defeated compliance. It is creative, unexpected action. And it says that I am not defined by what you can force me to do. I am free to make this choice because of the King that I serve. That's cruciform justice. That is a response to injustice that is shaped like the cross. Now think about what happened at the cross. Jesus did not retaliate against his executioners. He didn't call down armies of angels. He didn't fight back with the same weapons that they used against him. But he also didn't just passively accept what was happening to him or accept their verdict as true. He didn't just silently get swallowed up in their narrative that he was a criminal, a blasphemer, and a threat to Rome. It looked like that from the outside. But Jesus was taking all of that violence against him, and he was using it in a way that was going to flip the script on the ones who thought they had the upper hand on him. And in doing so, he revealed the truth. He exposed the violence of the worldly system. He exposed the brutality of the political machine. He exposed the complicity of the crowd in all of this. And he showed the world what these systems were capable of when they were confronted with innocent love. And did it work? Well, what happened 3 days later? God said, yeah, it worked, because he vindicated him by raising him from the dead. And in that way, he says yes to Jesus' way and no to all of the other ways that the world was offering. And I need to say this because there's a couple of things that I want us to understand. First is, all of these responses that we have, these are personal calls to personal injustices that we face. Nowhere in this does Jesus say, offer the other cheek, oh, and feel free to offer your brother's cheek as well. We're not given the right to expose other people to further harm. We're not given the right to require somebody else to go 2 miles with us with the pack. This is how God calls us in our own individual responses to something that has happened to us. And if you look at each of these responses, none of them are really life-threatening. I mean, the slap is not designed to hurt you. It's designed to humiliate you. The coat thing, well, that's not really life-threatening because they're not supposed to take that anyway, but you're offering it. These are personal insults that we're suffering here. And the other thing that we need to understand is that this way of responding to injustice when we face it, it's not weakness. It's not passivity. It's not letting people walk all over us. Because the reality is this, it takes a lot more courage and creativity to offer the other cheek after you've been slapped once. It takes more strength to give your coat than to hoard what little you have left. It takes more faith to trust God to protect you with your reputation than to defend yourself at all costs. And the only way that we can get to a place where we can live life with these postures is if we truly believe and live in the reality that we expressed at the beginning of this series. Jesus is King. And because Jesus is King, we can trust His justice. It's not to say that there's not a justice. It's just to say that in some of these cases, justice is not up to us. The world says real strength and power and justice is found in making people fear you, making them pay, crushing your enemies by any means necessary. And Jesus says that real strength and power and justice is found in the cross. That's the third way. And it's the way of the King that we follow. But the reality is, it's dangerous. It's costly. It's not safe. It's definitely not easy. Offering the other cheek might mean that you're going to get slapped again. Giving your coat might mean that that leaves you exposed. Going that second mile with a Roman soldier, they might want to stop you. Confronting injustice in a way that injustice is not expecting might not look like it's going so well for you. But here's the thing. Jesus never promised us safety. He promised us a cross. But the good news, and if you haven't caught on to this yet, I'm going to say it again. The good news is that he also promised us that the cross was not the end of the story, that resurrection follows crucifixion. He, not your enemy, not the system, not the injustice, not the violence, has the final word. The way of Jesus always leads to the cross, yes, but it never stops there because it always leads to resurrection. So how do we live this? How do we practice cruciform justice in a world of injustice? Because this really does. I mean, I'll tell you, if somebody were to backhand me, my first instinct is not to offer them my other cheek. In fact, I would bet my hand's coming up about the time that their hand makes contact with my face. This is just our natural response. So how do we live this out? Or at least how do we get our hearts in a posture where we can respond in this way? Well, the next time you experience a personal injustice or insult, I want you to pause before responding, which sounds ridiculous because in a lot of cases, it doesn't feel like there's enough time. So if you don't feel like you have time to respond, work on this stuff now while you're not experiencing the injustice. So instead of immediately fighting back or withdrawing in silence, think about a few things. First, ask yourself, what is it that's really going on here? What, and not just on the surface, what's the deeper dynamic? What's the actual injustice? Because sometimes when we're treated that way, we're just the nearest target. If there was somebody else standing in front of that person, they would treat them the same way. So it's not about you. It has more to do with the person who's doing something to you. So what is it that's really going on here? Next, and here's where we have to do some work ahead of time, prayerfully consider how you might be able to respond in these situations without mirroring the evil that you're experiencing or escalating the injustice. What response would expose what's happening without continuing the cycle? What would strip the other person of their power to define the situation? And then last, consider what it would look like to trust God in this situation. What would it look like, and what would it mean to believe that God's justice is better than my vengeance? Because let's be honest, most of the time when we're responding to these things, we're not looking for justice, we just want revenge. That's a human response that we all have. Now, I am not telling you what exactly your response should ultimately be in each of these situations, because every situation is different. We're all different. Sometimes the proper response is to speak firmly. But whatever the response is, the key is this. Your response should always be shaped by the cross. It should always confront evil without becoming evil itself. It should always oppose injustice without perpetuating the injustice. Now, here's another thing I need to say that I want people to catch and understand before we close. And this kind of goes along with what I said before about these are personal injustices that we face. We don't have the right to expose other people to ongoing abuse, which is a way that these verses have been misused, particularly in situations where women find themselves in situations that there's no reason they should remain in. Abusive situations, well, you just got to turn the other cheek. That's not what these verses are about. So if you are in an abusive situation or you know someone who is in an abusive situation, whether it's physical, spiritual, psychological, whatever it is, this passage is not telling you to stay in that situation and just suffer more abuse. And it's not telling those who are aware of it to tell that person, you just need to stick it out. Turning the other cheek is about exposing injustice, not enabling it. Over and over in the Gospels, and we're going to look at one of these stories next week, we see Jesus standing up for the vulnerable and confronting those who are using their power to abuse the vulnerable. So if you're in a situation like that, I think the most cruciform cross-shaped thing that you can do is to remove yourself from the situation, seek help, and maybe even involve authorities who can help you and protect you. And if there's anybody online who's hearing this, we can help do that. Cruciform justice is not passive acceptance of evil. It is active, strategic confrontation that refuses to mirror evil while also refusing to let it go unchallenged. In each of these cases, there's a challenge to evil. It just doesn't look like the challenge that normally you would see. And here's the beautiful thing about following Jesus as King. His justice is perfect. His justice is complete. His justice will prevail. So when we choose the third way, we're not giving up on justice. We're just believing in a better justice. A justice that doesn't just punish the wicked, but also seeks to redeem them. And I wonder sometimes if that's why we have such a hard time with this, is because the goal in anything that Jesus does, his goal isn't to condemn or punish. His goal is to redeem and restore. And the last thing when we experience a personal insult is to see the person who insulted us redeemed and restored. It's justice that doesn't just restore what was lost, but creates something new. It's justice that doesn't just end evil things, but seeks to bring good out of it. It's the justice of the cross. It's the justice of the empty tomb, and it's the justice of the King that we follow. So this week, you will, so when, not if, or sometime soon, you will probably face some kind of injustice. Somebody will disrespect you. Something unfair will happen. You'll experience the effects of a system that's broken. And when that happens, you have a choice. You can either fight back with the same weapons. You can perpetuate the evil and the injustice. You can withdraw in passivity and just let it keep going. Or you can choose the third way, this cruciform shape of justice that reveals the truth, that refuses to mirror the evil and trust God with the outcome. Jesus is inviting us to follow us on a way that is impossible without Jesus. It's impossible without having gone through the experience of being brought to new life. It's impossible without experiencing the grace of Jesus. And he wants us to walk this way, not because he wants us to suffer, but because he knows what lies on the other side of this. It always leads to the cross, but it also always leads to resurrection. Amen? Would you pray with me?